TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Dr. Helen Caldicott, North Korea, Donald Trump, and the Threat of Nuclear War. Helen Caldicott is an Australian physician, author, and anti-nuclear campaigner. She gave up her work as medical doctor to deal with an emergency much vaster than her specific field as pediatrician required of her, that of the nuclear danger that threatens all life on this planet. In over 40 years of activism, she addressed nuclear power and nuclear weapons, nuclear testing and radiation, from uranium weapons and mining to nuclear waste. She engaged with a major nuclear power accidents from Three Mile Island, Chernobyl to Fukushima. And she did all this through organizations she founded, talks she gave, books she wrote, and conferences that she organized. And she never really stopped. The International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War invited Helen Caldicott to speak at their September 2017 conference in Basel, Switzerland. At that conference, she expressed her grave concern about Donald Trump's extraordinary messages against North Korea, threatening fire and fury and total annihilation. And she's not alone with her concerns. As I'm recording this introduction in mid-November 2017, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee is holding a hearing on President Trump's unlimited authority to deploy nuclear weapons. It's the first time the Senate has examined the nuclear launch protocol in more than 40 years. In August of this year, listeners to NPR asked, if Donald Trump can just launch nuclear weapons via the nuclear code that he has access to at all times. Senior news analyst Cokie Roberts gave a comprehensive answer.
The heated rhetoric over the past week has many wondering about the use of nuclear weapons. The only time they've ever been used was by the United States during World War II. The rules for how nuclear weapons are used today have not changed since President Truman's time. So just who is in charge of launching a nuclear attack? That's a question many of you wanted answered this week, and we are putting it to Cokie Roberts in our regular Ask Cokie segment. So here's our first question.
This is Anne Moore from Cypress, Texas, and I wanted to know, if Congress has neither declared war nor authorized military action, would an executive order be sufficient to launch nuclear weapons?
Actually, nothing as formal as an executive order is required. It's simply the president saying that he wants to launch a nuclear attack. Presumably, he says that in a very short period of time after the military has detected a missile launch by a hostile nation. And the president's authority derives from the Atomic Energy Act of 1946, which was passed amid much controversy the year after the bombs were dropped.
Wait, what kind of controversy?
Well, you know, laws are passed in the context of the times, and the scientists who had worked on the bombs were having enormous qualms about what they had unleashed. And they started lobbying Congress to make sure that the bombs stayed under civilian control. Right. And there was a sense then that the generals were trigger happy and that they shouldn't have the last word on these massively lethal weapons. So the president has the sole authority over nuclear weapons.
Well, that gets us to our next question. Let's give a listen.
My name is Teresa Eamon, and I'm from Monroe, North Carolina. Does the president have access to the nuclear codes that he could launch a weapon without additional approval? What safety mechanisms are in place?
Well, the codes are in what's called the nuclear football. That's the thing that travels with the president everywhere he goes.
It's not shaped like a football, right?
No, it's not. But say the president learned of an attack, the person carrying the football, who's vetted, by the way, by the FBI, the Secret Service, and the Department of Defense, would show the president his options, whether he should attack by sea, air, whatever. And then the president has a device, which is called the biscuit, like a credit card, and it shows that he's the actual president. And then he gives the order to use the weapons, and he can launch close to 1,000 warheads in minutes.
Wow.
After that, there is no veto power. Under the law, the military must carry out the president's order.
Wait, but what happens if, say, a president is in no condition to make that kind of decision. Let's say he's drunk or otherwise impaired.
Well, that's a question that's been asked for decades, and actually some members of Congress are asking it again. Theoretically, the Secretary of Defense could refuse to pass the order down the line of command, but that would be illegal, maybe even treasonous.
Wow.
There have been reports in the years since Richard Nixon's death that his secretaries of defense and state, James Schlesinger and Henry Kissinger, were worried about the president's drinking and his general state of mind, and that they conspired to make sure that no one carried out the president's orders about nuclear weapons without checking in with one of them. If that's true, it was illegal.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That was an explanation of the power Donald Trump has to launch a nuclear attack. This interview with Cokie Roberts was aired by NPR on August 8, 2017. Next up is Dr. Helen Caldicott's talk in Basel, Switzerland, at the Conference of the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Andreas, and IPPNW. Physicians, doctors are very important because we try and save lives. We're not always successful. But the greatest threat to human health today is the risk of nuclear war. Now, a lot of people don't understand that, especially young people. I helped to lead the movement in the 1980s against nuclear war in America. So here we are in Switzerland, and no one knows what's going on, I don't think. Hands up those who think there could be a nuclear war tomorrow. Yeah, only those who are informed. We are closer to nuclear war than we were at the height of the Cold War in the 1980s, when Russia and America were like this. I went to see Ronald Reagan in the White House because he thought nuclear war would be a good idea. And he was excerpting a book called With Enough Shovels, and there was a man in the Federal Emergency Management Agency called T.K. Jones, and he said, if there are enough shovels to go around, we're all going to make it. That means when the bombs are coming from Russia to America, you have half an hour to get out your shovel, dig a hole 6 feet long, 2 feet wide, deep, and get in the hole, and then you put two doors on top and dirt on the top. And T.K. Jones said it's the dirt that does it. In other words, you dig your own grave, but of course you don't have enough time, and it was all stupid. I met Ronald Reagan's daughter, Patty Davis. A tall girl came up to talk to me with long black hair, and she said, I'm Patty Davis. And she said, you're the only person, I think, on Earth who could change his mind about nuclear weapons. Will you see him? And I said, yeah, I'll see him, but I don't want his advisors there. I want to see him alone. So she rang me up the next day. She said, we've got time at the end of his working day, an hour. And I said, what time is that? She said, 4 o'clock. So he knocked off at 4 o'clock, the President of the United States. So we met each other, and Patty and I in the Secret Service car swept into the White House, and we walked into the downstairs library in which there were no books. We waited for a while, and in walked Ronnie, and he was a bit nervous. He didn't know what to do. So I took his hand and I said, how do you do, Mr. President? Then he didn't know where to sit. So I said, you sit there and I'll sit there. And I said, you probably don't know who I am. And he said, yes. You're an Australian, you read On the Beach, which you young people must read, and you're scared of nuclear war. And I said, yes, that's right. And he said, well, I too am scared of nuclear war, but I believe in building more bombs. So we're off to a flying start. I spent an hour and a quarter with him, and every single thing he said to me was wrong. I'd just written a book called Missile Envy, and I was full of facts and figures. And so when he'd make a statement, I'd stop him and correct him. And he got very anxious, and his cheeks flushed. So I ended up half the time holding his hand, like a doctor holding the hand of a patient, to reassure him and make him relax. I estimated his IQ to be about 100, which is average when you take in Down syndromes and mentally retarded people. Very average. He would have been a good chicken farmer. but not President of the United States. And we've got a similar person now who's actually worse, who knows nothing. And when I left, I thought that I hadn't convinced him. But, you know, soon after he started to say nuclear war must never be fought and can never be won, and he started working with Gorbachev, a wonderful man who brought an end to the Cold War. And Ronnie Reagan and Gorbachev almost agreed in Reykjavik years ago in a meeting that they would abolish nuclear weapons, abolish them. But they got stuck on Star Wars. And Reagan thought Star Wars was meaning the whole of America was covered with a big yellow plastic shield and the Russian missiles would come in and go boink, boink, boink and not ever hit America. And he was totally wrong, but he was obstinate and so was Gorbachev and they got stuck on that and so he lost the opportunity to abolish nuclear weapons. Now let me tell you about today. We thought when the Cold War ended and the Berlin Wall came down, thank God, we were so tired. I'd go to 3 cities a day, get in a plane, give a speech, get in another plane, give a speech. I was so tired. And we mobilized 80% of Americans to be afraid of nuclear war, 80%. That wasn't bad in 5 years. How did we do it? By educating people and making them scared. Like when you tell a patient they've got a cancer, you have to help them with their pain and their grief. And we did that with the Americans, and they mobilized. And so did the Germans. I knew Petra Kelly, who founded the Green Party in Germany, and she led the movement here. So when the Berlin Wall came down, we thought, well, that's good, they'll get rid of weapons. Well, of course, if you know the military and the military-industrial complex, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, and all these wicked, wicked killing firms, they don't give up. And they're mostly men. And I'm fed up with men. Because we're about to probably destroy the only life in the universe. And when you look at parliaments, there are rows of men. Where are the women? When you come to Europe, there's a man on a horse in every square in Europe who's a killer. Napoleon was a killer. He's got a great grave in Paris. Why do we glorify war? Why do we glorify killers? What's it all about? Where are the women? 52% of us are women. We have the babies. We have our nurturing instincts. And yet we let the men, and I'm really angry, because I think there will be a nuclear war. And I said to my family, when I left, I'll be home if there's not a nuclear war. Let me tell you this current situation. We've got a man in the White House who has, I think, never read a book. He tweets, that's how he runs his presidency. And the man who invented tweeting, he said that it leads to a very short attention span, and that's what this president has, a short attention span. He knows nothing. He doesn't understand geography, history, or anything else. He just likes big crowds and adulation. Now, there are still 16,400 nuclear weapons in the world, and of those, Russia and America own 94%. The only countries that can destroy life on Earth are Russia and America. So who are the real terrorists? They're Russia and America, and they're evil. And I'm sick of it. And they say, oh, the terrorists, look, there's this man coming in from Iraq to, you know, drive a bus into people or shoot people. Well, maybe he saw his family being blown up into pieces by American drones and bombs, and no wonder he's angry and goes to London and kills people. Or goes to America and kills people. We're producing terrorists. We're talking about the creation. There are 3 trillion galaxies. Can you imagine that? And you look up in space and you look at these trees and the animals. How did this happen on this little tiny lump of rock? So we've got 16,400 nuclear weapons and Russia and America own 94% of them. North Korea, they've got a couple of bombs, yeah. They could blow up Seoul or New York. I don't really care about that. Yeah, they'd kill millions of people. But I care about the creation. About snails. I once did a project on snails when I was at school. Or my sunflowers. Or my roses. Do we ever think about that? So let me tell you how a nuclear war could start. There's a man who walks after the president, an officer, with a big case, and it's called the football. In the case are the codes to start a nuclear war. And apparently, officially, the only person in America who can start a nuclear war is the president. And the president is a narcissist. He's got a short attention span. He's got a bad temper. He's volatile, and you never know what he's going to do next. I don't think he does either. Absolutely mad. But America doesn't want to talk about madness or that sort of thing. I mean, you have American exceptionalism. Aren't they the most powerful, most important country in the world? They're the most dangerous country in the world. There are over 1,000 missile silos in North Dakota and Colorado and other states. In the missile is a bomb, which is a huge hydrogen bomb. There are planes armed with hydrogen bombs ready to take off any minute in America, all the time. In America and Europe and China and England and Australia and Canada and the like, every city is targeted with at least one hydrogen bomb. Every town with a population of 50,000 or more is targeted. Think of Switzerland, you're targeted. All industrial facilities, all universities are targeted, all military facilities. There are so many bombs, such a redundancy of weapons. I think New York's got about 10 hydrogen bombs targeted on it alone. The weapon will land in 20 minutes or 30 minutes after being launched. It's how long the missiles take. They go up into space, they transit through space, the bomb continues. The bus drops off, which is the missile, and the bomb continues and lands accurately on target, right on this theatre. It will dig a hole 3/4 of a mile. This is a 20 megaton bomb, 20 million tons of TNT. Dig a hole 3/4 of a mile wide and 800 feet deep. That's nearly the whole university, converting us and all the buildings to radioactive fallout shot up in the mushroom cloud. 6 miles in all direction, everyone is vaporised. There was a little boy in Hiroshima reaching out to catch a red dragonfly in his hand against the blue sky, and there was a blinding flash, and he disappeared, turned into gas, and left his shadow on the pavement, which is now in the Hiroshima Museum. There was a woman running, holding her baby, and she and the baby had been turned into a charcoal statue. People vaporized or charcoalized 6 miles out. And then out to 20 miles, huge fires, everyone burnt, lethally injured, winds of 500 miles an hour, suck people out of buildings, turning them into missiles travelling at 100 miles an hour, windows popcorn and shards of glass travelling at 100 miles an hour, decapitate people. The whole area totally destroyed. And then a firestorm will emerge of 3,000 square miles and burn everything, in the middle of winter even. Everything will burn. And a huge amount of smoke will rise up into the stratosphere. And if all the bombs are used between Russia and America, the Earth will be covered with a cloud so thick in the stratosphere it will block out the sun for 10 years, causing a short ice age and the end of almost all life on Earth. And it could happen tonight. By accident. By hacking into the computer. By computers making mistakes, by a 16-year-old thinking it might be quite fun, actually, to blow up the Earth. Every day there are over 1,000 hackers in the Pentagon, every day. It hasn't happened yet, but it easily could. Or Trump could decide, in his wisdom, so-called, to have a nuclear war and blow up the world. I'm not exaggerating. I said to my kids when I left, I'll be back if there isn't a nuclear war. I think it's closer now than it's ever been. And did you know those facts I just said? It's really scary. Okay, now, quickly, I have to talk about the hot spots in the world. We've got North Korea. Now, at the end of the Korean War between North and South Korea, Americans never signed a peace treaty with North Korea, just an armistice treaty. The North Koreans want to talk to America, and they want America to sign a peace treaty. They want a non-aggression pact, and they want a trade. And in fact, Jimmy Carter set up a situation like that, but George Bush abolished it. And they are ready to talk. They were one of the countries with nuclear weapons that agreed at the United Nations to abolish nuclear weapons. And there's a huge movement at the UN. 122 countries have signed on to abolish nuclear weapons, but America hasn't. And she never will, because she's so arrogant. And if America doesn't, Russia won't. And therefore, I don't know what good it's going to do. I don't know what good the United Nations treaty signed by many countries in the world. If America doesn't change, we're doomed. And you've got to understand the power of these corporations that run the Pentagon. And every year, twice a year, America conducts war games south of the 38th parallel, just south of the border of North Korea. And they have decapitation games where they're going to take out Pyongyang. North Korea saw what happened to Gaddafi. Gaddafi was killed, and before they killed him, they shoved a gun right up his anus. And that was orchestrated by Hillary Clinton. Obscene. And now Libya is a failed state run by tribes. They saw what happened to Hussein. Hussein worked for the CIA since he was 21 in Iraq. Wicked. Thou shalt not kill. You don't turn people into body parts with drones, with their flesh hanging on the walls. That's what we're doing every day in Yemen, Libya, Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq. And it's great because the weapons makers, bombs cost millions of dollars each. And when you drop a bomb, then you have to make a new one. Killing. I've spent my life trying to save children with cystic fibrosis and leukemia and cancer. And when they die, part of you dies. Life is so precious. How dare we go to other countries and kill people? Now, what else happened? When America agreed with Gorbachev to take the wall down, America promised that they would not enlarge NATO. And the little countries that were formerly in the Soviet Union, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia and all the rest, they would remain independent. But Norman Augustine from Lockheed Martin was bad for Lockheed Martin, because when the Cold War stopped, you didn't have to make weapons anymore. And they'd lose their profits and stop stealing $1 trillion from the American people every year to make weapons to kill. America has no free healthcare system, no free education system. It's got a killing system, and that's where their tax dollars go. So Norman Augustine went to these little countries and said, do you want to become a democracy? Join NATO. But then they had to invest in weapons. So the little countries were ignorant and persuaded to join NATO, so they've moved NATO, which is America, NATO is America, right up to the border of Russia. How provocative is that? How dare they? Imagine if Russia and the Warsaw Pact moved into Canada, right up to the border of America. America would blow up the world, without a doubt. She nearly did during the Cuban Missile Crisis. I knew McNamara, the Secretary of Defense, who was in the Oval Office with Jack Kennedy. He said, you don't know how close we came to 3 minutes before they blew up the world. 3 minutes or less. I don't know how we're still, I honestly don't know how we're still here, and I'm not exaggerating. So they enlarged NATO, and then the State Department in America, they orchestrated a coup in Ukraine. And they got rid of him by a man called Yanukovych, and he fled. And they put in a man called Poroshenko, And that was orchestrated by the State Department and Victoria Nuland, and they spent $15 billion orchestrating that coup. How dare America do that? And now America's worried because, oh, Russia interfered in their election with Hillary Clinton. America's interfered in almost every election since the end of the Second World War, in almost every country, and killed leaders. Like that wonderful man who is a doctor in Chile, Allende. How dare America do things like that? What they did in Central America was wicked in Guatemala and all the other little countries. And they have the gall to say Russia interfered in their election. Let's be frank. I think that Trump has been financed by Russian oligarchs who stole all the Russian oil, etc., and became filthy rich. They've been funding Trump for years. So Trump is, he's dependent upon Russia. You've got to have the guts to stand up. And if America doesn't change, I kid you not, we're doomed. I think I'll stop.
That was Dr. Helen Caldicott on the impending threat of nuclear war. She had been invited to Basel, Switzerland, to address the September 2017 conference of the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. Helen Caldicott is an Australian physician, author, and anti-nuclear activist. She led campaigns against nuclear power and nuclear weapons, nuclear testing and radiation, from uranium weapons and mining to nuclear waste. Helen Caldicott also wrote many books, among them If You Love This Planet, Nuclear Madness, What You Can Do, The New Nuclear Danger, Nuclear Power Is Not the Answer, War in Heaven, On the Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons in Space. Her most recent 2017 book is Sleepwalking to Armageddon, an assessment of the political and scientific dimensions of the threat of nuclear war today. Thanks to the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War for the audio recording of this talk, made on September 14, 2017, in Basel, Switzerland. And thanks to NPR for the excerpt of the commentary by Cokie Roberts on the nuclear launch protocol and the power Donald Trump has to initiate a nuclear war. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs or the Podcast section. There are over 40 free talks and films with Helen Caldicott on TUC Radio's website, spanning the period from Three Mile Island till 2017. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.